I was asked to preach on a strange topic. I don't know that it's so strange, it's just one I have never preached on before. I've been saying that a lot lately, haven't I? That's okay, there's a lot in the Bible to study. And sometimes we haven't gotten to all of it at various times for various reasons. If you don't have an outline, if you'll raise your hand, Quan will bring one around to you. Okay, we've got one over here, a couple over here on this side, and one up here, too. So keep your hands up so he can see them, and he'll bring you one so that you'll have an outline to fill in this morning. I tell you that I was asked to preach on this because you might not believe me otherwise. You might not believe me anyway. But I have witnesses. So it was a requested topic. Does everyone have one now? Okay. I think you got one more back there to give out there, son. As you notice, the title of the lesson is blank, and for those, for the one that did request it, it's not titled what you think it is. Our title for our lesson this morning is Indulgence. Indulgence. And indulgence is kind of a weird word. You know, we talk about indulging all the time. Most of the time we're referring to eating something that we know we shouldn't. But there are other kinds of indulgences as well. We may indulge in buying something that costs more than we want to spend. We may indulge, some people indulge in sexual activities of various kinds. Some people indulge in laying in bed all day and just being lazy. Some people indulge in any number of things. And so, I was asked to preach on gluttony, but I decided really that's just one portion of a larger issue, and that is indulgence. And so that's what we're going to study today. Under the introduction there, we see that we have defined indulgence. It is something that fulfills a desire. Something that fulfills a desire. In other words, it's not something that we need, but rather it's something that we want. And we might say, well, is it wrong then to have something that we want? No, it's not. And not every indulgence is a sinful one. And that's why we're going to study this topic. We'll have to learn the difference between what is sinful and what is not. The Catholic Church used to sell indulgences. They used to sell them. And now they make trades for them. It used to be in the Catholic Church, if you were doing something that you knew was sinful, you could pay the church some money, and they would say, well, that's okay then. You've paid for that. Or they would say, well, you know, if you're doing something wrong, you can go and say, you know, five Hail Marys, and that'll be okay. You've paid for it. Well, they now have gone further than this even, but in a different way. They trade things off. Listen to this story from the Houston Chronicle in November of 98. The Pope offers Catholics time out of purgatory by year 2000 indulgences. John Paul II announced Friday that throughout the millennium celebration, penitents who do a charitable deed, in other words, they do some little good work, or give up cigarettes or alcohol for a day, can earn an indulgence that will eliminate time in purgatory. The Catholic Church has this odd doctrine that somehow there's this place that purgatory that the Bible doesn't talk about in the slightest. But they believe in this place and teach about this place. And they said that for all the bad things you do, you have to spend a certain amount of time in purgatory. And then when you spend enough time there, God will let you go on into heaven. And the more bad things you do, the longer you have to spend in purgatory. Well, It doesn't have anything, you know, the Bible teaches us that either you're lost or you're saved. Either you go to heaven or you go to hell. There's no, you can work it off for, you know, 1,000 years and then go on into heaven. The Bible doesn't teach any of that, but that's their doctrine. And so now they've got this new thing where if you'll just give up some bad thing like drinking or smoking, or if you'll do some good little deed, maybe if you bake some little old lady some dinner one day, some widow lady that can't do it herself, then you'll get time off for good behavior, so to speak, from purgatory. Kind of an interesting idea. But the Catholic Church, by this, is teaching the doctrine that it's okay if you go on and do all those things, but then if you do some little good deeds, it'll make up for it. And it'll kind of balance out. You know, that's kind of the way we think sometimes about the indulgence. We say, well, I'll do this over here, but then over here I'll do a little less. Maybe I'll overeat here at this meal, but then I'll skip this other meal. And that'll make up for it. It doesn't work that way. We can't cancel out the bad things we do by doing a good thing later on. That's not the way sin works. That's not the way being justified in God's eyes works either. The scripture that was read is our point C under the introduction. That is, let your moderation be known to all men. Philippians chapter 4 and verse number 5. Let your moderation be known to all men. That lets us know that we're going to have to show that moderation. We're going to have to show that little bit of limit upon ourselves. We're going to have to control ourselves. We're going to have to not go to excess or to extreme. Now, along with this point, since we're going to be talking about the excesses of indulgences, we want to point out here, the idea of moderation also deals with the other extreme. There are some extremes that would say that, well, you can't have anything that you want. If you do anything at all that is physically pleasing to you, then you sin. And that's the opposite extreme from indulgences. This is the extreme. It's called asceticism, which teaches that you've got to punish your body constantly. And this was a big thing during the time of the Spanish Inquisition, where they would beat the sins out of people. It would beat it out of you, and you torture your flesh in different ways. And they were constantly doing things to themselves to show how much they hated their fleshly bodies and how spiritual they supposedly were. Colossians talks about this and refers to it as will worship. It's not something that's commanded by God. It's self-willed. It's self-imposed. And it's not something that God says. But that's the other extreme. See, moderation tells us then we don't go to either extreme. We don't deny every physical pleasure that there is in the world. We'd be miserable people if we never enjoyed anything in life. But on the other hand, we don't go to excess with those pleasures to where we worship and serve the body and its pleasures instead of God. See, moderation. Let your moderation be known to all men. We're going to look at three things in the area of indulgence. The first is gluttony. Gluttony. Now, gluttony is defined as excessive eating and or drinking. Excessive eating or drinking. And under the law of Moses, in Deuteronomy chapter 21 and verse 20, under the law of Moses, it was punishable by death. Gluttony was one of the things that could receive the death penalty. That seems kind of odd to us. Wait, somebody ate too much and they deserve to die for that? But that was one of the things under the law of Moses, according to Deuteronomy chapter 21 and verse number 20. This isn't the only thing, but it's a factor of it. They're talking about verse 18 Moses deals with, there's a man who has a stubborn and rebellious son. And he's trying to correct him, but the boy, man even, won't be corrected. He continues to do wrong. We know that it's got to be a grown child here, because of what verse 20 says. They'll bring into the gate in front of the elders of the city, and here's what they say in verse 20. They shall say to the elders of the city, "This our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard." In other words, he eats too much and drinks too much. He's a glutton and a drunkard. And when they say that, then they, all the men of the city, verse 21 says, shall stone him with stones that he die. Under the law of Moses, gluttony was worthy of death. Now, one of the things that we have to understand about gluttony is gluttony can be a one-time event, or it can be a lifestyle. All of us probably at one time or another have been guilty of the sin of gluttony as a one-time event. We have, and this is very appropriate considering the Thanksgiving holidays and the Christmas holidays just around the corner. Everybody's fixing all these big meals and eating too much. If you've ever eaten until you hurt, you've experienced the sin of gluttony. See, the pleasurable desire of the taste of that food, oh, it was so good, and then, oh, it hurts so bad. You're experiencing some of the punishment that's associated with that sin. But there's more that could be associated with it if it's something that we continue to do. We've got to learn better. We've got to learn when to stop and say, I've had enough. No more. We need to understand about gluttony, because it's sometimes joked about. We make fun because, oh, well, so-and-so, oh, that, you see, oh, they ate so much, and we say, oh, I ate so much, I'm hurting. And we don't laugh very much because we really are hurting. And we make a joke about it. We make jokes about, the comic strip Cat Garfield, if you've ever seen that. You know, he's overweight because he eats too much. He eats all the time, he won't stop eating. And he's got all sorts of rules about never going on a diet and all of these kinds of things. We've got to understand, we don't need diets. What we need is self-control constantly. All the time. We don't need to diet for a week and then be gluttonous for a week and then diet for a week and then be... No, with moderation, remember? Eat enough all the time. Don't eat too much here and then think, well, I'll skip a few meals over here and make up for it. That's not moderation. That's going from one extreme to the other. It's unhealthy, for one thing. Gluttony itself is unhealthy. There have actually been cases of people who have eaten so much that it killed them. It can happen. You say, well, I've never got... But it could happen. We've got to learn to control our physical desires. We all have to eat. That's one of the difficulties of gluttony. It's not like, you know, with drunkenness, we can say, well, I'm just going to avoid alcohol altogether. I'm never going to take a drink of it. And if I never take a drink of it, I know I'll never become drunk. But with eating, we can't say, well, I'm just never going to eat. The people who have done that have died as well. I don't know how many of you remember the case of Karen Carpenter. She literally starved herself dead. She wouldn't eat. And she died. And other people have done that as well. That was just a very famous case of it. We can't do that. We can't go to those extremes. So we have to learn self-control. We have to learn moderation. We have to learn how to eat enough to live. Remember that we eat to live. We do not live to eat. We do not live to eat. There are some people who do. Paul talks about those people when he talks about those whose God is their belly. They live to eat. Everything they do serves their stomach. Why do they work? Well, they work so they have money to buy food. They may be living in a raggedy house, may not even have a car, or driving a raggedy old beat-up car, but buying expensive food to eat, and eating it hundreds and hundreds of dollars of food every week or every month, and just obsessed with food. We see also, we talk about this being excessive eating and drinking. We know, let's see, being drunk is a sin. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 18 tells us as much. Be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess. it's an excess. And that's what we're talking about. Excessive eating and drinking. Don't be drunk. Well, no, we're not supposed to take wine and be filled with wine. He makes the contrast. We're supposed to be filled with the Spirit of God. A Holy Spirit. Not an alcoholic spirit. That's what we have to be filled with. And then we see, D, this is a common misconception. Gluttony and obesity are not the same thing, but they may be connected. There are many skinny people who are gluttons from time to time. Maybe even some skinny people who practice gluttony on a regular basis. They will gorge themselves. We have people who have called bulimic condition, where they gorge themselves with food and then they'll throw it back up. They're gluttonous. But they know that the consequences of eating all that food is they're going to become obese, so they'll throw it all back up before the body has a chance to digest it. That's a very disturbing problem. But there are lots of people who are not at all overweight, but they will eat huge meals until they hurt, but then they'll go and exercise and work it off in one way or another. One of the biggest things that we have to understand, though, is making a practice of overeating will make us obese. It will make us overweight. It will, without a doubt. And we know, we people talk about, you know, well, I have a gland condition. Those are very rare. Most of us that are overweight because we eat too much. There are rare cases of people who actually do have a gland disorder that causes them to even eating just a little bit to still get rare. Certain medications will cause you to gain weight. That's an unusual circumstance. But for the most part, gluttony brings about obesity. But just because someone is overweight does not mean that they are gluttonous. And just because someone is not overweight doesn't mean that they're not gluttonous. They may just as well be. And so we have to understand that gluttony is not just being overweight. It's overindulging in food. Now some of us will even do this kind of thing, but in a different way. We won't eat too much, so to speak, but we eat too much of the wrong thing. We'll skip the meat and the vegetables and all of the healthy foods and pig out on cake and ice cream. And say, well, you know, I didn't eat too much. I wasn't overly full, but all we've eaten is things that's not healthy for us. There again, the moderation. It's not sinful to have cake and ice cream, but we've got to learn to moderate. We can't eat a whole box of donuts for lunch and then have cake and ice cream for supper and expect that we're doing what's right in regards to our bodies. We can't live like that. Well, we can for a period of time, but this will develop diabetes and all sorts of other health problems if we continue to live in that way. But we have to work against gluttony, even as a one-time event. As the holidays are coming up, we're all going to be tempted to overeat, particularly Thanksgiving dinner. We've got to fight against that. Overcome that. Now we're going to move on, and we're going to cover these others rather quickly, because that was the one that we wanted, because it's so rarely even mentioned. But these other two are important as well. The second one that we see is extravagance. Extravagance. And extravagance is defined as excessive spending of money. Excessive spending of money. Being obsessed with wealth and things. That's an extravagant thing. First we see that wealth brings about worry. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse number 12 tells us this. There the preacher, as he refers to himself, Solomon, as we know him to be, tells us, Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 12, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. He's so worried about those things. Worry about what might happen to them while he's asleep. worried that somebody might come in and steal them, worried that his house might burn down and destroy them, worried about everything, about that wealth. He can't even sleep good at night because of that obsession, because of that excess of money. We need, instead of being rich to ourselves and piling up abundant things for ourselves, we need to be rich toward God. Luke chapter 12, verses 16 through 21, the parable of the rich fool. He had all these wonderful wealth, and instead of using it for good, he stored it up for himself. He built huge new barns and huge silos to store his grain in. He couldn't eat all that grain. It wasn't for him. It wasn't his necessity. You know, it'd be one thing to store up enough for yourself and for your family, but he stored all this. It was just going to rot before he'd be able to eat it all. But he wouldn't share. He wouldn't give. He was rich to himself, but he wasn't rich toward God. We need to be rich toward God. We have great abundances. Wanted to share a case of someone who was obsessed with their wealth. Jim and Linda Onan of Wadsworth, Illinois. They wanted an unusual house, and so they built a 7,000 square foot pyramid covered in 24 karat gold. Does that sound like extravagance to you? It does to me. And then they built a moat around it, and the Onans planned to stock that moat with sharks so that no one can get to their gold pyramid. You see, the Bible teaches us that the home is supposed to be a place open for hospitality. Not a castle shut up and gated so nobody can get in. It's supposed to be something where we can share with others the blessings that God's given with us, not where we can lock those blessings all in so that nobody else can enjoy them. So we've got to change these things. Our money is not supposed to be spent on luxuries, but it's supposed to be spent on ministering to others. Because of the wealth of our country and because of the welfare that we have and Social Security and some of these things, we've lost that need many times to minister to others because, they're getting a check. They'll be all right. And so because of that, the government, in some ways, and by our wealth in our country and the way that it's able to be distributed through welfare and Social Security programs, has taken away our need to give and to be generous to others in many cases. There are still cases where we can, though, and we need to be willing to do that. We need to understand as well, if we don't have that problem of poverty in this country, that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist elsewhere in the world. There are Christians in other parts of the world who would just be astonished to see the building that we worship in. What we talk about is a junky car is probably the nicest one in their whole city. We don't understand. We can't imagine sometimes how much God has blessed us with. He expects us to use those blessings to serve Him, not to serve self. And then third, we want to look at for a moment sexual perversion. This is another place where our society is becoming obsessed was going away from the doctrine that God has given to us. Sexual perversity, we define it as any way of getting sexual satisfaction that is not normal. And by normal there, we don't mean what's voted on by most of the people and that is legislated as legal. When we say normal, we're talking about God's standard of normality. What He says is normal and natural and right. Not what man says. Because man can say anything is normal. We've got to understand what God says. Then we see under that, first of all, that homosexuality is abnormal. Romans chapter 1, verses 26 through 28 tells us very clearly that homosexuality is contrary even to nature. It's unnatural for men to be with men and for women to be with women. It's amazing in our society. The Massachusetts court has just, within the last couple of weeks, struck down a law that would have made homosexual marriages illegal. And they said, oh, that's unconstitutional. If they mean by that the Constitution doesn't talk about it, they're right, because the framers of the Constitution could have never imagined that it would have been an issue. To them, it was just common sense that marriage meant a man and a woman. Everybody knew that. Marriage didn't mean a man and a man or a woman and a woman. That's what marriage is, a man and a woman. God explained that when he performed the first marriage ceremony. He said, God speaking through Adam. Adam was a prophet. Did you know that? Adam spoke for God in this? Because Jesus assigns the statement to God, even though Adam's the one that spoke it. He says, "For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife." Not his husband. His wife. He makes it clear. It's supposed to be a man and a woman. Man leaves his father and mother to marry his wife, to cleave to a wife. But in our society, it's gone from bad to worse. Not only has this court proclaimed that that's unconstitutional to ban homosexual marriages, but recently another court, I believe it was in Colorado, I heard it on a news report, so I didn't have the documentation for it. Court in Colorado actually took a child away from his mother, claiming that she had been teaching him homophobic ideas. They claim that even a parent can't teach their child what's right, what's wrong. By their teaching homophobia, they probably meant that this mother had taught her child that being homosexual was wrong, that it was a sin. That's probably what they were referring to. And the problem there being that the father of the child was homosexual. Well, obviously not homosexual his whole life, or he wouldn't have had the child. But he had turned to homosexuality. And so a situation there where the courts are saying, you can't tell your children that it's wrong to be homosexual. That's absurd. We have to teach what the Bible teaches regardless of what the courts say or what anyone else says. Then we see also that fornication is abnormal to God. All fornication. We can't just say, well, it's acceptable. There are things that are accepted now that were so frowned upon that people hid in their darkest closets to do them 100 years ago. And now they walk up and down the street and brag openly about these things. We know from the scriptures that fornication is still a sin. It was a sin under the Old Testament law, but it's still a sin under the New Testament law. In Acts chapter 15, verses 19 and 20, one of the things that the apostles said they were going to teach the Gentiles was to abstain from fornication. One of the things that Paul condemns about the Corinthian church was that they had fornication. And he says the fornication they were involved in, it was so bad that it was worse even than what the Gentiles, those that weren't Christians, were doing. It wasn't even named. But in our society today, it sure is. A man had his father's wife. Well, those of you who've ever seen some of those afternoon talk shows, they have shows like that every day. These folks doing these kinds of things. There are people all throughout our society that have those things going on. We need to make sure that it's never something that any of us are involved in. We, all of us, need to understand this, and we need to teach it to the next generation. Some of us may have made those mistakes in our life. We may have committed fornication. We may have had sexual relations before we were married. Some of our young ladies may have gotten pregnant before they were married and not had a father for that child and not had a husband to help provide for that family. That may be the case. But we need to learn from those mistakes that we made, deal with the consequences, continue to raise that child to do better than we did, to learn not to make those same mistakes that we made. We need to learn these things so that we do better in the future than has been done in the past. We may not have been taught these things. We need to make sure that our children do learn them. That sexual relationships outside of marriage are abnormal to God. God says, husband and wife, and he says that the marriage bed is undefiled. A husband and wife sexual relationship is pure. It is clean. But anything outside of that is a perversion of God's intent for the sexual relationship. The sexual relationship was intended to be pleasurable for the husband and wife. And because of this, people have taken that pleasure and become obsessed with it and perverted it to do things that God never intended with it. Just like eating. God intended eating to be a pleasurable experience. Otherwise, why would he have created such a wide variety of food with so many good flavors and different flavors for us to enjoy? That's why he made all of these things. but we have to enjoy them according to His guidelines. We can't just do it any way we want to. In conclusion, we want to look at a couple of things. Be temperate in all things. Temperate is very similar to moderation. It defines self-control. Have self-control in all things. Not just sometimes, not just some things, but all things, all the time. Control ourselves. And this is 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 25. We need to understand that spirit and flesh fight. Our spirit and our flesh are fighting against each other constantly. The flesh wants to enjoy all of those physical desires. The spirit knows that we need to be doing what's right for God. We need to be spiritual. Our mind, many times, is caught in the middle of these two arguing. You know, you've seen say where they've got an angel on one shoulder and the devil on another shoulder. We face that battle within ourselves. It's not an angel and the devil telling us these things. It's within us. We're fighting ourselves. We're hearing one little voice in our head that says, "Oh, go on, dude, it'll be okay. You'll enjoy it. Don't worry about what might happen later." And another little voice on the other side is saying, "You're going to regret it if you do that. Do what's right. You may not have as much pleasure now, but it'll be better in the long run." And our mind is caught between these two things. And we have to battle that out. And we have to do what's right. We have to struggle with those things. But the flesh and the spirit and the flesh, they fight. Galatians chapter 5, verses 16 and 17 tells us this. We many times are unwilling to deny ourselves. We will do whatever we want to do. Whatever desire we have, we'll fulfill it. If we're going to be Christians, we've got to overcome that. We cannot continue to live following after the fleshly lust. Story is told about how an Eskimo kills a wolf. This being a true, old-fashioned Eskimo. The way that it was done was they would take a knife, sharp knife, and they would coat that knife with blood and then freeze it. And then they put another coat of blood on it to freeze it, and again, until the blade was completely covered up and it looked like just a blood popsicle. And then they would stick it out on the ground with the blade up. And the wolf would come. His nose would smell that blood, and he would come to it. And he would begin to lick it. And oh, it tastes so good to him. I know we might not be interested in that, but to a wolf, nothing could be better. And so he would lick, and he would lick, until he had licked all the frozen blood off and gotten down to the bare blade. And you know what happened then? As he continued to lick, the knife cut his tongue. And because of his insatiable desire for blood, he didn't even notice the pain of the knife cutting into his tongue. And he didn't notice that the blood that was filling him was his own. And he would literally drink his own blood until he died. Now we say, well, I'd never do something like that. Disgusting story, I know. But spiritually speaking, that's what we do to ourselves when we indulge in these things. When we go to excess. When we are gluttonous. When we just gorge ourselves with food and drink. Or when we just load upon ourselves wealth and possessions. Spiritually, we're doing exactly what that wolf did physically. We're draining the spiritual life out of ourselves. And just gobbling it up. Sexual perversions cause the same kind of thing. It just goes from bad to worse because eventually that's not good enough. You've got to have something more, something else. And so you go further and further and get more and more extremes. Jesus tells us the way to avoid this. He says, take up your cross daily. Luke chapter 9 and verse 23. If anyone would come after me, he must take up his cross daily and follow me. We can't just say, well, you know, I did it one day. No. Every day we have to deny ourselves. Paul says, I buffet my body daily. He used to say he buffets his body daily. But he does. He denied himself. He told his body, you're not going to be in control. I know I have physical desires. I know there are pleasures in this world. And I'm going to enjoy some of those things, but I'm going to do it within moderation. I'm not going to allow my body to control my mind and my spirit. There was a fascinating experiment carried out at the National Institute of Mental Health. They took a case 9 foot square, and they put 160 mice in it. They constantly supplied plenty of food, plenty of water, and the perfect environment for the mice to survive. They began with just 8, 4 males and 4 females, and they eventually let the population grow to 2,200. It took them 2 years to get that many mice, but over 2,000 mice. They had everything they needed. They weren't sick. They kept it so that there was no disease. They gave them plenty of food, plenty of water, no predators. Everything was perfect for the mice. And here's what they found. They found that they failed to help one another in need. If they did something to threaten one of the mice, the other mice didn't care. No concern. Sound like our world today? Heard stories where someone was in need, even suffering, facing death, and people just walked by or just looked on. Wouldn't even call 911 in one case, as a woman was being beaten to death. And the apartment window, they looked out and watched, didn't even call 911 to report the crime being going on, much less go out to help on their own. And ultimately, they failed to even reproduce. They didn't. They just got to where they were so self-indulgent, so lazy, they didn't care about anything. They just ate, slept, drank, and slept. And within 5 years from the beginning, every one of them was dead. Having enough of everything so much that there's no need, there's no desire to work harder, to get anything better, is destructive. It's good to have to work for things. It's good to have to get things. You remember the passage in Ecclesiastes 5 that we read, that the laborer enjoys his sleep. When you've worked, you sleep well at night. But when you have everything, that's why our society is suffering so much with insomnia and sleep disorders. We have everything. We have so much. Now they're trying to come out with new beds that'll help you sleep better. It's not going to help. I mean, it may temporarily help the problem, but eventually the same problem is going to exist. We just have so much. It's almost too much. We have to learn self-denial. We have to learn to take up our cross and follow Jesus. We have to learn to sacrifice desire. We need to do it in the area of food. We need to do it in the area of extravagance with our wealth. And we need to do it certainly in the area of sexuality as well. Have these things the way God intended to have them. God doesn't want us all to be poor. He wants us to have wealth, but he wants us to use that wealth to glorify him and not to hoard it selfishly to ourselves. He wants us to eat. He created food so we could eat. All the trees in the Garden of Eden he put there so Adam and Eve could have them for food. But they indulged in the one tree out of all of those hundreds or even thousands. We don't even know how many trees. But there was only one he told them they couldn't have. That's the one they went after. We do the same thing sometimes. The doctor says, you got to quit eating this or that or the other, it's going to kill you. What do? Oh, we want it so bad. And we'll go after it a lot of times. Knowing that we're destroying ourselves in the process. Sexually, people have, you know, when the AIDS epidemic started, people say, oh, this is going to get people to quit. This is going to get people to straighten up and live right and not be sexually promiscuous. No. Oh, it scared a few people for a little while. But not anymore. Nobody's concerned about it. Nobody's afraid of it. You see, self-control is the one thing that will help us in all of these areas. If you've been indulging in sinful activity, we know that it's wrong to indulge too much. We know there are things that we desire that are good for us to have, but indulgence, overdoing these things, getting out of moderation is sinful. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation for any reason, we ask that you do so as we stand.